The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available as always on iTunes and Stitcher and NFL.com.
S-H-E-K, Shaq, Shaq, Shaq.
Yeah, I tripped you up there, black guy, didn't I? We've now shut down the NFL.com/S-H-E-K page in favor of driving everything to the homepage now. So please make a note of that. Much obliged. We have much to kibitz about, even though July is nigh. A lot of people shut it down until training camps open up. Not here at the Dave Dameshek Football Program. We plow ahead, and speaking of which, we talk about running backs that plowed their way into our memories, into history. At NFL.com, I released a written version of my top 10 running backs of the Super Bowl era. So did Elliot Harrison, and so did Bucky Brooks, speaking of whom, he is seated to my left and to the left as well of a guy all the way from London, England. He now serves as our resident Miami Dolphins fan. Here he is, everybody. It's Handsome Hank.
He's Handsome Hank. He's Handsome Hank. He's Handsome Hank.
Hello, Handsome. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Thank you, Dave. Very, very busy.
Are you very busy?
Very busy indeed.
Because why?
Because we just announced. See, when the NFL draft, Bucky gets a great heads up with the NFL draft. He knows that it's coming, you know, the date's set a year at least in advance. He knows he's got to research all the players. I just had the information dropped on me just minutes ago that the supplemental draft, which is kind of in the same way that Bucky's one of the five go-to guys around the actual draft, the supplemental draft's kind of all me. And it's next Thursday.
Yeah, it's like Joe Lenardi carved out a thing for himself as a bracketologist ever ago, 8-10 years ago. Handsome Hank, same way. You're a supplemental draftologist.
Exactly. And so, you know, for me, I've got to watch film of the four eligible guys, really break it down, and then put out a mock draft. So it's not, this is a tough time of year.
Your work ethic is second to none, and you really are big on breaking down tape, as you say, so I'm not going to hold your feet to the fire and willy-nilly throw out predictions now. We'll look forward to your mock supplemental draft at some point next week. In the meantime, you just heard his voice there at NFL.com, along with his absolutely cockamamie ranking for his top 10 running backs of the Super Bowl era. He also has a better piece up there ranking the top 20 coordinators in the NFL. We're going to dig into that in just a second, but here he is. It's Bucky Brooks. What's the poop with you?
What's on, guys? I can't believe you take me to task for
my running back list. But before you started typing, did you think about it, or did you just think, like, what 10 running backs can I name from the Super Bowl era? Yeah, just I'll put them in whatever order, because that's how your list looks to me.
No. Did you read the verbiage? I know you like to go back and you like to look. You and Elliot, I know y'all like to pop in VHS tapes of 80s games and look back on yesteryear fondly.
No, I like to do that with the 70s.
You know, but there are some running backs in the modern era that deserve recognition. I'm more willing to go with that route.
Bucky, you have sweetness number one. And I think I'm surprised all three of us, me, you, and Elliot Harrison, and again, this is at NFL.com for perusal, and I encourage you, Nate, demand that you go and check it out so you can be a part of the conversation yourself. But
NFL.com/top RBs.
Top RBs. Thank you, Handsome Hank. Walter Payton, I think, Handsome, you do the programming for the homepage here. Why? You should have found somebody else who disagreed with that. We needed one guy. Well, all three of us have Walter Payton at number one.
Well, he's the best.
Well, I mean, obviously I agree, or I wouldn't have been number one. But I think there are a lot of people out there that would make a case for Barry Sanders.
Not over
Walter Payton.
Why, no? Well, we agree. That's the point. I know I'm not going to argue on Walter Payton, but there are people out there who think Barry Sanders is best. We should have heard that opinion. Or maybe Emmitt Smith. I don't think anybody buys that at this point. The further away we've gotten from his career, nobody tries to make a case.
Well, Elliot.
Hardcore Cowboys Elliot fan.
Tried to make a case.
Yes, Elliot has the best line.
Well, I thought he had him low.
He had him at three.
He had him, Emmitt, at number three.
Which was
and his opening line, Bucky, goes like this. Emmitt Smith. Some of my colleagues don't give Smith any respect. It's complete bull. It's complete bull. That's what he wrote.
Such a fan.
Emmitt, number three.
Tony Dorsett on his list, too.
I had Tony Dorsett, too. I had Tony Dorsett not
but
just
you had
on
Tony
my
Dorsett
list
because,
at number
like,
four.
You probably had a Tony Dorsett poster in your room when he was at Pitt. Like, you really bought into the Pittsburgh
first
thing.
Football game I ever went to in my life was to see Tony Dorsett, the senior, run.
Right, so nostalgia. You have a lot of personal connections with the old-timers that you threw in.
Oh, I didn't realize you have no connection with any of these.
The old-timers. All the old-timers. All, like, guys that were artifacts on your wall growing up. Like, you really embraced it.
I saw Tony Dorsett play with my own two eyes, and I'm
going to
apologize.
And so those childhood memories still are kind of carrying you on. They're clouding your vision when it comes to looking at what others have been able to do when they put together their
career. How do you figure? I have LaDainian Tomlinson at number eight.
At the bottom?
At number eight. That's pretty high up there.
I mean, that's kind of disrespectful with what he accomplished.
What about the juice, O.J. Simpson?
You know, I thought long and hard about the juice. I did. I seriously considered the juice. But part of what I was thinking about, I wanted complete players. The only guy to me that's not complete on my list was Jerome Bettis in terms of not being able to make contributions in the passing game.
Jerome Bettis over Earl Campbell? Where's your head, Bucky?
He played longer.
All right, great.
He played longer. Durability, production, all that stuff matters. Like, I wanted guys that had a long, sustained level of dominance. That's why Curtis Martin is in the list.
All right. Curtis Martin, the issue isn't that you even put them on the list. It's that you have them
and then
so far up there.
My list
Curtis
was only
– Martin is
my
the
list
seventh.
Only included 10. Your list had 10.
That's right.
Plus another 20, plus another 5. Like, the list is 10.
You know what
so
that's
So if you
called?
Only can get 10 in – I only want 10. I don't want to see the other names. I don't care what the guys outside the 10.
That's why people
close,
around here call me honor, AD. That's why people
honorable
here.
Mention. I don't care
My
about
nickname
that.
Is AD all day. That's what I do. I just keep on grinding. That's
oh
why. That's
my
what
God.
I do.
It's a top 10 with 30 names.
But, well, Bucky, you had Edge James on that.
Did you see what Edrin James has done?
Edge James.
Of course I've seen what he did.
Edrin James led the league in rushing 2 years. Like, that's the thing. Like, if we're talking about greatest running backs, at some point, don't they need to have crown achievements within single seasons? He led the league in rushing back-to-back years, had a knee injury, 2 years were subpar, came back, had back-to-back 1,500-yard seasons.
In a
just off your top 10, Sean Alexander's probably, what, 12, 13, 14?
No, because I know what Sean Alexander was, and I know how he benefited from playing behind Walter Jones and Steve Hutchinson. Like,
so you go Edge James. I mean, listen, I think Edge is a little bit slept upon. I think that
I don't
he's
think
great.
He gets
I think he gets
respect.
Too much. Yeah, right, I agree with that. I think he gets slept on as though he wasn't an all-time great. He just happened to benefit from having Peyton Manning in front of him is nonsense. But Jerome Bettis at number 9 ahead of Earl Campbell justify. You want to talk about deeds? In an era when running backs mattered more to their team, Earl Campbell walked in the door and immediately took a mediocre team to 3 straight playoff appearances.
Okay, so if you're so high on Earl Campbell, how come you're not high on Terrell Davis?
I am, except that Terrell Davis shuts it down more quickly than – you know what? That's a great – you know,
that's the same thing.
Absolutely
so
valid
It's like
point.
Haley's Comet, Gale Sayers, all these guys. So they play 7 years. Like, I understand how hard it is to play, but we're talking about the best. And the greatest and leaving a lasting legacy. Like, look, I respect what Earl Campbell did, but, like, I think he played 7 years, and then he was really battered and beat up those last 2 years when he got to New Orleans. So I'm talking about greatness, guys who did it over a long, sustained period of time. And, look, if you can ding me for one, I would say, like, Jerome Bettis is a guy that I grapple with because at the end he was a bit player, a part-time player. The story is probably better than the production. But
you want to talk about production? What's surprising is you start pouring through these, certain assumptions that you make in your brain or that have gotten grooved into your brain over the years from hearing other people talk about it, and your own memories get warped a little bit. I'll tell you, Adrian Peterson's numbers outside of, and I'm not, obviously you can't remove the 2,000-yard season, But if you take that one away, it's not like the numbers stack up with everybody else. I know he's on a sort of a trajectory have gotten there, but
he led the league in rushing twice.
All right, so a lot of the guys. We're talking about the best of the Super Bowl era. Not a lot of those guys have.
Some of the old-timers that you and Elliott fall in love with, some of those guys didn't walk away with rushing titles.
I fell in love with
them.
It made me feel funny. I didn't know how to grapple with the emotions.
Adrian Peterson, 1,700 yards in 2008. You talk about 2,000 yards coming off the ACL injury. The level of dominance that he sustained. Like, look at his average rushing yards per game. And then you think about the yards per attempt. All of that stuff factors into it. Like, we talk about Emmitt Smith, and you have Emmitt Smith. Emmitt averaged 4.2, 4.3 yards per carry. That's nice. Barry Sanders averaged 5. Like, so if we're talking about really dominating and putting your imprint on it, like, that's what I'm talking about with greatness. With Eric Dickerson, had 3 seasons in his first 4 years where he had over 1,800 yards when he entered the league. Like, that's something that's like, ooh, that's what I'm talking about.
All right.
Notable accomplishments.
I hear you, and we'll move on to the 21st century here in 1 second. But let me just address Tony Dorsett specifically for a moment here.
Wait, you're talking to him, or you are addressing him being on the list?
I don't know. Both, maybe.
I think Tony
may be listening.
Tony, if you're listening, this bit's for you.
Hopewell High. That's the pride of Hopewell High, Mo Damashek's neck of the woods, Aliquippa and Beaver Falls and all that. Tony Dorsett, here's the thing, Bucky. Please, can I play? Enough with both of you. Both of them are sitting in here. I invite them into Studio 66.
I have this assignment.
They both sit here typing on their cell phone.
I'm looking at your list.
Oh, okay. All right. See, that's all right.
Okay.
That's cool. That's respectful, Bucky.
I'm doing the triplets tournament.
All right, we've got that coming up, college football version of the triplets. All right, listen, let's focus for 1 second. Tony Dorsett is on this list, and he's so far up there because in the Super Bowl era, there are very few individuals who have been more seminal to the trajectory of pro football than Tony Dorsett was back in 1977. Gil Brandt, the architect of those Cowboys teams.
Uh-huh.
Highway robbery. He robbed the Seahawks, who had the second pick. The Buccaneers had the first overall pick. This is the year after the Buccaneers went 0-14 and were an abysmal team. They choose USC's Ricky Bell over Tony Dorsett, the reigning Heisman champion.
He's one of my childhood heroes, Ricky Bell.
Is that right? Did you have a poster of him hanging on your wall?
Not quite like a poster, but I did make sure that I watched a lot of the Buccaneers.
I don't understand.
Because remember Doug Williams, Jimmy Giles, Kevin House, Ricky Bell. I dug that. I like the swashbuckling pirate on the side. I was fascinated by the cream.
Buccaneer Bruce. Yeah. He has his fancy chapeau tilted slightly askew. Yeah. Not unlike you have your hat today. I don't understand. Why do I get beaten up because I like people when I was a kid? You like Ricky Bell. That's why. See,
Ricky Bell's not on my list. I didn't put him on my list. Tony Dorsett, my biggest contention with Tony Dorsett. I don't think he ever had a season where he even became close to touching 300 carries.
He was a
part-time bit player.
What's the Devils a bit player? The Devils advocate, the Devils Damashek.
Whoa,
he wasn't a part-time player.
He shared the load
with who? Robert Newhouse,
Preston Pearson, all those guys. He didn't beat those guys out. Early in his career, they were rotating people in the backfield. Come on.
He was a part of a rotation. Preston, because he was a slightly built guy, Tom Landry decided to not pound him.
All of those guys on my list are bell cows.
All right.
All of them held weight. So we're talking about the greatest.
So that's what you the like, greatest. In other words. So
I don't,
what you
I don't
like
want a role player. I don't want a role
touches.
Player as a great guy. Like, I don't want. Like, that's like saying Tim Tebow is great if he's a role player. No,
Tony Dorsett was a phenom when he got to the league. And had the Seahawks drafted him, their trajectory would have been very different. Instead,
it's not the NFL. It's not your piece.
But it matters, though. Because Tony Dorsett, if he goes to the Seahawks, they're a completely different team.
But he didn't, though. He played
for
the Cowboys.
He goes to the Dallas Cowboys and extends their dynastic run, their pseudo-dynastic run, well into the 80s. He gets there in 77 and takes them into the early 80s. Otherwise, who knows what would have become of that team. He alters the story of NFL history by his presence with the star on his hat instead of that weird bird thing up in Seattle. It's a major difference. And along with Walter Payton, as I write in my piece, They're both trailblazers in that they caught passes. Very few running backs in that era were used as pass catchers. Tony Dorsett was very productive in the passing game. If not for Tony Dorsett, there's no Marshall Faulk.
Maybe. Marshall Faulk, 1,000 and 1,000. 1,000 rushing, 1,000 receiving. You talk about four times he had 2,000-plus scrimmage yards. I mean, like, we're talking about notable
different era, and I have Marshall Faulk on my list. Yeah, very high up there, too. I mean,
so I'm trying to figure out who I'm supposed to take out. Who's supposed to be
I just told you who you're supposed to take out. You can't have –
Jerome Bettis. Okay, take him out. I put Thurman Thomas in.
Well, Earl Campbell belongs.
No, he doesn't.
All right. Listen, let's move on now. But, yes, Hanson.
I want to just say one thing. Do you think if Al Davis wasn't a wacko for a period of time that Marcus Allen might have made your top tens? He basically got shut out of that Raiders.
Marcus Allen gets pretty close in my book, as it is. I have Marcus Allen at number 12 all time, or in Super Bowl era.
Another guy like Chahu Hebro, I had an opportunity to play with him in Kansas City. Like, he's a guy –
the irony of Bucky Brooks charging me with having, well, these are your boyhood idols, and then you citing, well, he's a boyhood idol. That's why I have
him. He was. But I have the ability to move
Bucky
beyond.
Got to play. So do I. Do I have Jerome Bettis up there? Do I have Franco Harris at number two?
You know what? Full disclosure. I absolutely expected to click on your list and see Franco Harris and Jerome Bettis. So I was shocked that I was the only one that had
Jerome Bettis.
I was like, for sure, as a grown-up,
I'm able to distinguish.
For sure, Franco Harris was going to be on the list.
Why I always have to point this out? Listen,
but
I am a
grown-up.
But he did
make number 11.
Yeah. He's not quite on the list of 10.
The guy who retired is the second leading rusher in history.
The guy who ran out of bounds? He's the old version of Sean Alexander.
He stayed on the field long enough to take home four rings, so I guess he was on the field a little bit.
Because the defense did everything.
He just was a passenger for the ride.
That's right.
And he got lucky. He was on that team that had a
– and Sean Alexander. Carbon copies.
That's not a bad compare. Actually, when you the pigskin doppelganger.
Both of them knew where the sideline was at all times.
All right. Listen, that's an outrage. Later in his career,
he figured out how to preserve his career. Ask the Raider Grace. They would tell you he would find a soft spot near the boundary.
Speaking of soft spots, that's what they were looking at, namely his butt, his soft butt running away from them into the end zone.
I'm just telling you what the guys would tell me.
Goodbye, Raider. Well, what do I care with George Atkinson, who was bitter that his team –
a great Raider.
His team got beaten up by the Steelers
when those two
great 70s rivals met. I'm sorry to George Atkinson and Jack Tatum and all the rest that they couldn't stack up ultimately with the mighty Pittsburgh Steelers, except interesting that you would bring that up, Bucky, because in 76, Super Bowl 11, the Steelers had their greatest team ever, their greatest defense at least, but Franco Harris and Rocky Blyer both injured before the AFC title game. Neither could play in the game.
And they got beat up.
By the Raiders.
Beat up.
Well, but if 32's on the field, wearing the white jersey in the East Bay, perhaps 32 takes them across the goal line and onto another Super Bowl.
I don't think so.
All right. Well, now we're just speculating, aren't we?
We are.
All right. Let's speculate about some other stuff. Where to go here? Do you want to talk coaches right now? Handsome Hank, I leave it to you. Spin the wheel.
Oh, really? Okay.
Spin the wheel. What do you want to talk about?
I
want to
talk about coaches. Bucky put out a good list, or two, or maybe even
three
lists last week. I'm going to call it two and a half, Bucky, because basically number three was
a compilation.
Was one and two together.
By the way, I invented lists. And now everybody else, all the Johnny Come Lately's doing their lists
everything. A lot of lists.
Dan Mishek was doing lists when it wasn't cool. And I'm still doing it now that it's still not cool. Hey, Handsome, do you want to talk about Bucky's coaches?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the other choice for you. Do you want to play the game of ifs? I said to Bucky as we walked into the studio today, there are ifs. This is the time to ask the ifs. If this happens, the Miami Dolphins will win the AFC East. If that happens, the Miami Dolphins will finish last in the AFC East. Do you like that game?
It sounds like a cool game. I mean, I did like Bucky's list, but
we're going to get to that as well.
I feel like I'm being steered here.
Let's
play ifs.
Do you want to play ifs
or
do you
want to
play the coaches draft?
No, well, I said coaches, but you seem to be steering.
I'm just giving you – I want you to have all the information before you make a choice.
What would you like me to do?
I don't know. Or three, would you like to watch the Caitlyn Jenner special that's coming up? I saw a commercial for
not
that.
Three.
I don't know how to feel about that. I don't know what to think about it. Are you going to watch that?
No, I didn't know anything about it until now. I have no interest.
I just saw
in,
a commercial.
I never knew who she was.
Is that true?
Yeah, before I got to America, I'd never.
Who was the great British sprinter?
There's a guy called Linford Christie.
Linford Christie.
Yeah.
I remember watching him too.
He could move.
He should have tried out for the NFL. He was big. He was a tall guy, wasn't he? Wasn't he like 6'3" or so?
That truck thing doesn't always work out.
I know it doesn't always work out, actually, Bucky, but more guys should. Why, of all the guys, wouldn't Usain Bolt make sense to try that?
It depends on some.
So, you know what? We had a guy in NFL Europe called Dwayne Chambers, who was like the next Linford Christie, British sprinter. Very fast. Didn't really like getting hit. Turns out, sprinters don't get hit that much, and when they do, they would rather sprint.
It's a hard mix because there's a perception with track guys. I ran track in college, but a lot of times you have to fight through those stereotypes that track guys aren't tough, and so you have to find guys who are really football players that run track. There have been some great guys in the league that are playing in the league today that have some notable track and field accomplishments. We just saw Marquise Goodwin popped a 27.5 and a half at the U.S. Track and Field Championships, which was fourth place, and he hadn't jumped
triple
in three
jump,
years.
Dave.
Is that – I don't care, triple jump. That's the weirdest looking.
Long, that's long jump. Triple jump is like –
Oh, really?
The triple jump is the goofiest looking.
Yeah.
Who came up with that? That's an event that we need to see like, who can do that best?
It feels like someone's like falling over doing the long jump. And you like, can no, I meant to do that.
You can frog hop the bat. Who cares? Well, I don't care. It's not, we need to give away a full medal for that? That seems like
a
lot.
Full medal.
Yeah, there's
maybe
some
give one of those chocolate money things.
Also, I'm against these people when I drive around these days. I see more and more of those stickers, bumper stickers in front of me that have the 13.1 on them. Now, if you have the 26.2, I think the arbitrary distance that is the marathon, if you run it, good for you. If you feel that this is life-affirming or whatever and makes you feel special, good for you. I don't really see the merit in devoting a year of your life to see if you can run 26.2, which is again an arbitrary number. It's the distance between Athens and Marathon, Greece. Did you know that, Hannah?
I did know that.
I figured you would know that because you're a Euro. But I bet some. Is that offensive to you?
Yeah, a little bit, but it's fine. Carry on.
It's offensive to call you a Euro. That's what you named your money.
I didn't know they're called pounds. Again, showing your ignorance. Carry on.
Handsome and I are going to a baseball game.
I know.
Game. Handsome and I are going to see the American pastime on Friday, the day before we celebrate our nations. The Los Angeles Dodgers. Trolley Dodgers versus the
Mets.
The Metropolitan.
The Amazings.
Yeah, how about that?
The Amazings. That's pretty good.
The day before we celebrate the birth of our nation and the crushing of Handsome's.
It's I'm thrilled for you guys.
It's going to be a lot of mixed emotions.
You got your independence, whatever it is, 200 years ago, and so far you're using it well. Let's see how that carries on going.
Bucky, is the getting hit thing the most – I know it's obviously a requirement, but is that the most basic, important trait that a guy can have, more than speed, more than size? I mean,
you have to be courageous because it's –
It's not a mind – I mean, you know, we get so caught up in this banging heads thing and don't go helmet to helmet. But at its most basic, if you like, hey, I don't want you hitting me when I'm doing that, it's a not – trumps all else.
That's not going to work.
Yeah, courage. I wish that everyone could just watch a game from field level, like stand on the sideline and really see how fast and how violent the game is. I know in TV – HDTV and the sound, and we hear the audio and stuff like that. But watching it field level, shortly after I retired, I remember watching a game field level, and I was like, this is nuts. Like how fast it is, how violent it is. Like you're conditioned as a player where you're not really – you just kind of block it out and you play. But like when you come out of it, you're like this. Like you actually run up in there and take like grown men knocking you around willingly. Like it's – you have to be a little – out of it, a little kooky to be on the field and kind of play that. And so
I agree with that.
When you talk about wide receivers and guys going across the middle and doing those daredevil things like returning punts and returning kicks, you have to have a level of toughness that's a little different than most people will exude.
Who's the greatest guy who didn't like contact? Deion Sanders?
I think that's a misnomer. I think with Deion talked about making business decisions or whatever. Like, I played with a guy, Eugene Robinson, who talked about you have to know when and where you can make big hits because if you want to play for a long time, you have to selectively dole out those big hits. I think with Deion, he made that decision. I think, you know, y'all has brought up Sean Alexander. Sean Alexander was not a guy who really loved a lot of contact. As great as he was, what I will say, he's a guy who loved the lights. If we played on Sunday night, Monday night football, or anything where the national crowd was going to see him, he's going to bring his best games. But any other time, you're hit or miss on what kind of tough guy you would get from Sean Alexander. He liked to perform when the stage was big, but I can't say that he absolutely loved the contact and loved grinding it out like some of the guys that we've seen. You talk about Earl Campbell. Guys who love contact end up like Earl Campbell. It's tough. It's a tough game. You're dealing with grown men coming fast.
It's another thing I mentioned in my top 10 guys is one of contact sports' enduring ironies is that the biggest guy is the one who gets beaten up the most because, you know, obviously multiple people are banging at him to try and take him down. And that, like I say, pervades all the contact sports. You've seen it even with basketball players.
Shaq gets
hammered out.
Nobody feels bad for the big guy.
That's exactly right. All right, so we decided coaches or
I'm going to go with if.
Ifs. All right, then let's let Black Tie Behind the Glass decide it for us. Choose a division, anything but the AFC East, because the last podcast we spent on the AFC East. Go ahead, Black.
Can I choose coaches? Because we've been teasing that for only like a week.
We're getting to the coaches. We're doing ifs now. Don't be a difficult person behind the glass.
I'm not being difficult. We have a limited amount of time.
All right, please.
All right, let's go with the NFC South.
NFC South. Yeah. Interesting choice and a fascinating division coming
up. Hold on, Black Tie. I can tell you've been in that Atlanta because that South sounded like it had an F at the end. NFC South, king of the South. So I can tell you've been to Atlanta. You know, king of the South. Yeah, I got it. I got it, though. Look, Waffle House and all that down there.
Black Tie doesn't know what's going to happen to his hero, Chris Paul, though, if DeAndre Jordan leaves. He's nervous about that.
Because DeAndre Jordan's going to be a Laker?
I think he's going to be a Knick.
Oh, why would he go to the Knicks?
He wants an expanded role. Wants the bright lights.
Why would you go to the Lakers? So unsettled there. You don't know what's going to be with that. By the way, they still might deal D'Angelo Russell. Don't be surprised. Damashek says it now. It could still come to pass. If Boogie Cousins is the bait, then they will give away D'Angelo Russell in order to get Boogie Cousins, and that would be the right move. All right, we're going to play if now. Here we go. NFC South, Bucky Brooks. The Carolina Panthers will win the NFC South if
their offensive line protects Cam Newton and they allow him to become a playmaker from the pocket. If their offensive line protects, they're good enough now on the outside. Devin Funchess, Kelvin Benjamin, Greg Olsen, have Jonathan Stewart behind them. They can be a dynamic offense, but it all starts up front. If they can control the trenches, they'll win the NFC South.
Handsome Hank, how say you?
I would agree with that, but I've got an if. For another team in the NFC South.
All right, I'm excited to hear it. Let me give you mine. I would like to see for once Jonathan Stewart stay healthy. He's a guy who, when on the field, almost always is super productive, and yet he's not somebody you even consider when you start talking about the effective running backs in the NFL. Because I mean, more than anybody, more than Darren McFadden, more than even D'Angelo Williams, who his old teammate. He cannot stay on the field, this guy. But when he's out there, he would. If he does, that team is getting pretty close to not having a lot of chinks in the armor. I mean, the offensive line, as you say, Buck, is a question. It's not terrible or it's not as bad as it looked a year ago. And, you know, now that with Funch is now and, the, you know, Olsen is effective, obviously, and Benjamin in year two, the defense is very good, even if you don't know a lot of the names on the back end. They're good at all three levels. I more and more I'm thinking they're going to repeat in that division for the third straight time. But real quick, they finish in last place if – and let's leave injuries out of Cam Newton. Is there any – I mean, like, too easy to just say the starting QB goes down.
I mean, I think it goes back to the offensive line. They finish – and last, if that offensive line completely falls apart, like it's shown signs of doing. Last year, it struggled, which is why they were really behind the eight ball going down the stretch. But if that offensive line doesn't come together, because they still haven't determined who their starting offensive tackles are going to be and if you can trust those guys. If they don't get productive play outside, they will not repeat in the division. They could end up being cellar dwellers.
Yeah, it's interesting because in that division, you look at all four of those teams and you can sort of see how each could win it, and I include the Buccaneers in that because Jameis Winston. I give him that X factor, whatever you want to call it. I think he could be good enough to actually carry them to that division crown. Handsome, what's the team you wanted to have a big if on?
I'd like to talk about the Atlanta Falcons.
All right.
And I'm going to say if Dan Quinn can give them the toughness that Mike Smith failed to do last year, especially on defense.
Captain Tiva.
With all the talent that they have on offense, the Atlanta Falcons can win that division.
How say you, Bucky Brooks?
If the offense plays the right way, the Atlanta Falcons can win the division.
Tell us what the right way is.
The right way is if they steal a page out of the Dallas Cowboys blueprint where they run the football, shorten the game.
Do they have the pieces to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Because when you look at Kyle Shanahan coming over, you have a couple of zone runners and Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman, the rookie coming out of Indiana. Zone-based blocking scheme allows those guys to find creases. They have athletic offensive linemen. You question how good that offensive line is. But if they can get on tracks and allow those guys to run the football effectively, Matt Ryan is outstanding throwing the ball down the field off play action. I think with Roddy White and Julio Jones and a strong running game, the Atlanta Falcons can win by allowing their offense to be their best defense.
Tell me this, and both of you can chime in on this. Why the Falcons of 3 years ago, was that the mirage or the last couple of years the mirage? Because it's weird that they got within a play of going to a Super Bowl, and, I mean, there's nothing that would – I mean, it almost seems – weird in hindsight of how good that team was. I mean, they knocked off the Seahawks, the mighty Seahawks on the rise, and then they knocked that, and then they almost took down that great 49ers defense.
They were a good team. They had young weapons on the outside, Julio Jones, Roddy White. Matt Ryan played at an outstanding level. They had some balance in the running game. But the thing that really killed them the last couple of years, they've been beat up front, offensive line, and they didn't have the running game. When you have a running game, it allows you to create the identity that you need to play playoff football. You have to be physical. You have to be rugged. And to do that, you have to be able to run the ball when you decide that you need to run the football. And for the Atlanta Falcons, I believe they're more of a finesse team, a team that had to rely on the passing game, and they just didn't have that requisite toughness that you need to deal with the Seahawks and the 49ers and some of the bullies that exist in the NFC.
To Handsome's point, is that it? Can Gus Bradley, I guess we sort of saw that happen with Rex Ryan. Can a guy walk into the room who's not going to be playing?
Talk about Dan Quinn, yeah.
And just say like, hey, guys, because we saw Mike Smith try it, and we laughed and laughed watching Hard Knocks with Mike Smith and his Tivas trying to swear at his team to inspire them. It was laughable. But can a guy who's got the pelts on the wall of a rugged defense and all that, can Dan Quinn walk in and just say, we're playing tough and the team listens?
Well, I think the thing is, whoever the coach is, he has to be authentic. If that's your personality, that personality right. has to be ingrained in you. It has to be who you are on a daily basis. For Mike Smith, the thing that Mike Smith can't do is you can't change after 4 or 5 years in the building and then try to be something that you're not. Toughness and all that other stuff can be taught, but really it's about a style of play. So when Dan Quinn comes in, one, all ears perk up because now he's the new sheriff in town. He has the ability to get rid of a number of players, so they're more likely to fall in line. But he comes from Seattle. If you look at what Seattle has done and how they've kind of created that monster up in the Pacific Northwest, they run the football, they play very physical on defense at every turn, and they challenge and create a very competitive environment. He's going to take that and try and put that in Atlanta. If those guys buy in, they absolutely can do it. They have to find a way to stop the run on first down on defense and then find someone who can get after the passer. That has been their biggest issue since they let John Abraham go. If they can do that, they have an opportunity to get right back to being at the top of the division.
All right, we have two more teams. Let's get through them quickly here, and then we'll do the coaches draft here, the long-promised one. We'll jump to the Buccaneers. Anybody want to jump in with an if? Here's how they finish in last place or in first place. I'll offer up this. I've said that I think Jameis is going to be a day one star in the NFL, and I think he's got the weapons on the outside. We'll see what happens with Vincent Jackson there. But either way, they have the pass catchers. individual pieces, at least, it's almost baffling how the defense could be as crummy as it is when you look Gerald McCoy at the first level, Lavonte David at the second,
yes,
and, you know, Werner back there, by all accounts of people who study him say he was terrible last year, but he's got the pedigree at least, or he's got the history that suggests he can be all right. I think they have enough defense to hang around in a mediocre division. If Doug Martin or Sims or somebody with that offensive line can at least stave off, give them some threat on the ground, I think that team can absolutely win the division in Lovie Smith's second season. How say you?
I think it comes down to definitely having the running game. There's no doubt about that. But I think the big if is you know, the quarterback position. You have to have a rookie season like a Cam Newton one or an Andrew Luck one. I don't think you can throw a bunch of picks.
Yeah,
Jameis just, like, there's no there. I don't think he can go in there, and that team's not going to recover from him turning the ball over a lot.
Well, I don't know about the Cam Newton RG3 comparisons, because Jameis isn't going to run around, but can he do what Matt Ryan did in his first season in Atlanta, Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh? I know the pieces aren't the same, the situations aren't the same, but that's who he's going to be. He's just going to have to put up big numbers throwing deep balls to those big receivers that he's got there. I think he can do that from day one.
I think it all comes down to what Dirk Koetter discovers very early in training camp and in the process. Like, the thing that I like about Koetter is he's very adaptable in his style and how he calls the game. When he was in Jacksonville, he had David Garrard. They were very conservative. They ran the ball with Fred Taylor and Maurice Jones-Drew. They averaged, I want to say, well over 136 rushing yards per game during his time there. When he goes to Atlanta, they open it up more. Matt Ryan sets franchise records for passing yards and does a lot of great things putting the ball through the air. I think it's really critical early that he understands what he has at his disposal in Jameis Winston and caters the game plan to that. I think Jameis has to make sure that the only thing he has to do is just don't turn it over. Keep the turnovers to a minimum. And it's hard for a young quarterback to understand that, particularly one that has a lot of confidence and self-belief. But if he can manage the turnovers and just play – like he's always played on the big stage, I think Tampa's offense is good enough to get him there. The big thing will be, can Lovie get that defense to kind of play at a level that allows them to hang with the heavyweights?
Yeah, dominance isn't required in that division defensively, although the Panthers have had the best defense.
Yeah,
they've won.
And the pieces are in place for Tampa to be able to play really good defense, but it won't be in the Tampa 2 style that we've kind of tagged with Lovie. They have to kind of deviate from that because Tampa 2 no longer is effective with the quick rhythm passing game.
But I know, but if it's named after your town that you're playing in, it seems wrong to abandon the Tampa.
You should
just be required to play in perpetuity. Come up with the Tampa 3. Do something, but you can't get away from the one.
And you know, it's actually Tampa 2 is actually the Steelers' steel curtain.
I know. Where do you think came from? Number 21, Tony Dungy, out
That's
on
right.
the field
I
there
mean,
for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Where do you think he came up with it, playing around with the all-time greats there? None of whom made my top 10 running backs list, by the way. I'll remember.
None of the Steelers' defensive players made your top 10 running backs.
That's exactly right.
Incredible.
All right, let's finish it off here with the Saints. The big if for them, Handsome Hank, is what?
I think if they rediscover their form on offense, I think if C.J. Spiller can become what they missed when they lost Darren Sproles, then I think that team could take off again.
It's an interesting thought. I lean more towards Brandon Cooks. Somebody, I've been saying this for 2 or 3 years now, Marcus Colston has the name at some point where he's getting into Pro Bowls and he does well in fantasy and people just, well, they have a good receiver, Marcus Colston, but he really has not
slowed
been.
Down.
He wasn't productive. That offense 3 years ago was turned over to Jimmy Graham, obviously. Obviously, is their primary target. He's got somebody has to catch the passes there. They're going to be a run-based team, but somebody's going to have off in the passing.
And you're right, Brandon Cooks is going to be that guy. But you know, where they've had success is when they've had guys like Pierre Thomas and all those guys who can do everything out of the backfield. And C.J. Spiller is basically that, but more.
Who doesn't have? Why isn't Pierre Thomas on an NFL roster right now?
Insane.
I think he's so good; it makes no sense to me.
Man, the running back position, he's played a long time in the league. And once you get to that 30 mark with a lot of carries, a lot of wear and tear, early on, it's tough to take a running back like that. When you get into the season, because we love our young players, we as scouts and evaluators, we love to believe that the guys we've drafted are pulled in, they're going to handle those roles. Pierre Thomas's phone will ring after 2 weeks into the preseason.
Yeah,
after we see guys play that first preseason game, you're like, I'm a little nervous about my young guy being able to hold up in pass protection or do some things, that's when those vets begin to get the phone calls. And at worst, once we get into the regular season, week two or three, the phone will certainly ring because you want to have a vet that can come in and pick up the playbook real quickly.
Any way you could give us a big if on how they could be the worst team, the Saints, in that division?
Well, I'm going to go two things. Sean Payton wants to make the New Orleans Saints a tougher team. When the Saints were good and they made their Super Bowl run, a lot of people forget they ranked sixth in rushing. They need to run the football, take some of the pressure off Drew Brees. Don't make it the Drew Brees show offensively. C.J. Spiller gives them a complimentary player. They play alongside Mark Ingram. They now kind of have that yin and the yang. Run inside with Ingram, outside with Spiller. Use Spiller, much like they use Sproles in the passing game. That will help. The guy who is probably in Kansas City, we used to call this thing the big sombrero. Josh Hill is a guy that they're really banking on. Josh Hill is the tight end, very athletic, a guy that has tremendous athleticism. Part of the reason they felt good about moving, letting Jimmy Graham go, trade him away, because they felt like athletically this guy can do a lot of the same things. If he lives up to the hype, that offense is good enough, and that offense is good enough to carry him to the title. They fall to the cellar if that defense continues to struggle like they struggled under Rob Ryan the last year or so. If they can't stop the run and hold up against those physical offenses that are in the South, they will not make it to the postseason. They will not finish higher than third in that division. Their defense has to carry the weight because they invested a lot. The four picks that they got from Jimmy Graham and all the trades that they made, they all were invested on defensive players. If those defensive players don't live up to expectation, they will not get out the cellar.
Yeah, well, and like we've talked about, Drew Brees has to accept that and embrace that that's what he's got to do. By the way, I saw him the other day. He has really, like, he's got crazy receding hairline. It might be time for him to just go bald now, you know? It's reached that stage. Like, you know, I must be troubling if you're his teammate. Like, yeah, but you're bald, man. You got, like, you got insurance salesman hair now, you know? Like, just go, you know, salvage the dignity that remains there and lose the rest of your hair. All right, let's get to it. So there we go. The NFC South black tie. Did you like the big if game there?
That was great, actually. Really good segment.
Thank you.
Really good segment. Actually, good segment. I liked that for the rest of the divisions.
All right. Well, good. So then we'll do it then.
Okay.
Black tie liked it. So now let's get to our coach's draft here. What video?
Yeah.
Look at, he's really bought in.
That's what
division by division.
All right. Then the big ifs. We'll do those as we press on here through summertime. Right now, though, let's do Bucky has his top 20 coordinators across the NFL, counting it down.
Elimination chamber.
What? All we hear about is that we have to get to the...
We do, but I feel like we should throw this out there. Marshawn Lynch recently jumped in a pool of Skittles, so I ask you guys, favorite candies, Skittles, Kit Kat, Reese's Pieces, M&M's, eliminate one.
What a terrible
That's the
quartet
worst.
Of candy.
Everything about it is
listed.
The worst. Do you want me to start?
Yes.
I would eliminate all American chocolate.
That I agree with.
I would just
completely.
Throw it all in an incinerator, melt it, burn it, whatever. Wow. Just get rid of American chocolate. It's disgusting.
Nah, not the high-end stuff.
Willy Wonka over
there. Give me an example.
Yeah.
Ghirardelli.
Willy Wonka.
Willy Wonka over there. Dreams. Man.
All right, Charlie Bucket. Quiet now.
Ghirardelli chocolate, San Francisco.
No, it's disgusting.
It is not. Well, shame
it wouldn't
you.
Even but, like you call that high end chocolate. I would call
it,
that wouldn't end. Even make it. That wouldn't even make a list of top.
Why?
100.
Why is it so much better?
By the way,
because
they don't make chocolate with whatever it is that you make chocolate.
Well, what do they do? I don't know.
I don't
about
know
it.
Either. But I have no idea. I don't. All I know is what my taste buds tell me. Your chocolate's disgusting. Chocolate from outside of the U.S. is terrific.
I definitely like hearing you say chocolate more than
chocolate.
Chocolate. Chocolate.
No, I mean chocolate.
Chocolate. I won't eat your American chocolate. All right, here, look at this.
I really won't eat your American chocolate.
I like this. Uh-oh. See, black tie, I hope you're happy with your little elimination chamber there.
That's right.
Kit
no,
Kat
no,
is...
No coaches.
You don't
no
eliminate...
thing today.
You can't eliminate Kit Kats, by the way. Those are the best of...
I like a Kit Kat, but I like a Kit Kat with
Kit
real
Kat.
Chocolate on it.
Who
with
says
English
Reese's
chocolate?
Pieces when Reese's peanut butter cups exist? Why? Who prefers the pieces to the peanut butter cup itself? That makes no
candy?
Sense.
Is that what we're doing?
Look who it is. He just walked through the door here, one of our very favorites. Back in here, in spite of his purse. I like him very
purse.
Much.
Satchel. You didn't call it a merce when Indiana Jones had it.
I don't remember the scene in the trilogy when he walked around with What'd you call it? A MERS?
A MERS, yeah.
A MERS, yeah. Now, listen, he's a fashion-forward fella, and lionblood.com is where you track down all of his fine apparel. It really is sharp, and you look good on the network. I watch you in that.
Yeah.
Now you've gotten plaid blazer now.
Going with plaid sport over the summer, yeah.
I like that very much. It's Nate Burleson, everybody. I didn't say his name.
Hey.
That's who it is. It's Nate Burleson.
It's a strong beard, by the way.
My beard is strong?
Oh, strong.
Thank you. See, that means a lot coming from another fashionista like myself. Yes, Black Tie, you have something? Yet?
Nate's here for but 5 minutes. There's a lot of work to do. We wanted to hit on. He had his top five breakout wide receivers, so
he did
have him in here. And
I mean, I like how this – see, this is how it works here. Nate's just walking – oh, he walks into 66.
Stopping
by. Going down.
They said you need me. I'm coming, hands down. Doesn't matter when and where. I told you, anytime you want me on, I just –
No. Let's try that again, Nate. I don't want it to feel like Dave needs you. I want it to just be like, hey, we have an open-door policy. I love – nothing I like better. Like, I'm here at work, but my break is to talk football with Dave and the fellas in 66.
I want to come chop it up with you because I have a good time, and I get to be a little unfiltered here. And I love to tell stories. And I get responses on social media every time I leave here.
Is that right?
They say, man, we need more stories from you. And I only tell stories here.
What stories?
We love Nate's stories. We love – well, but you did come in and we want to promote on NFL.com. You did it earlier in the week on Total Access. You gave us your top five receivers going – is that how you gave it?
They could break out. They could break out.
Oh, these are your breakouts.
Do you know who number one was?
You're
not going to guess this name.
You won't guess this name. You won't guess who's going to break.
You haven't heard of him yet. Prepare yourself.
You may not know who he is.
It better not be the guy whose name I also saw on a poll as the best receiver in the NFL.
I think it might be.
12 games into his career.
It might be.
I saw Calvin Johnson. Who's the best receiver in the NFL? Wide receiver. Is it Calvin Johnson, Dez Bryant, Antonio Brown, or Odell Beckham?
Well, it can't be Odell Beckham. He hasn't even broken out yet.
Apparently.
There's no way he can be.
Odell Beckham's your breakout?
He's a secret.
Well, listen. Yeah, he's under the radar right now.
I did it in more of an introspective way, a little bit deeper than more surface breakout guys, in the sense that he broke out last year, burst on the scene. All of a sudden, he's in.
I broke him out of the wrapper of my new Madden football game.
Let's just say he's in people's top 15. You know, this guy has potential to have a great career. What I was saying, with all the factors of Eli getting to know him for another offseason, maybe a healthy Victor Cruz, Shane Vereen, he could break out into being one of the best receivers in the league. Now going from their top 15 to top 3. So if he does that, that is another breakout. That means in year two – You're up there mentioning with Antonio Brown and Calvin Johnson. You're telling me that's not another breakout?
No, I hear you.
So that's the angle I was taking. You know, I didn't necessarily say it's a guy you don't know of.
Is Odell Beckham 10 years from now, is he easily from the 2014 class? And let's – because people are very excited about this gang coming in this year as well. 10 years from now, who's the best receiver? Give me the top three receivers.
Ooh.
10 years from now.
Oh, wait.
Who's going? You know what? Also, I like raising the stakes even further here. Let's go around. Who of those receivers? Mike Evans, Martavis Bryant.
Martavis Bryant has 28 catches.
Yeah, well, he's a Steeler, Buck. That's why.
Come on, Bucky. You knew that was coming.
I'm not
up.
Allowed to say Martavis Bryant.
He's about to say Sammy Coates next.
The second name you uttered. Martavis Bryant, not Sammy Watkins, not Brandon Cooks.
I'm not putting them in any order. That's what I'm saying to you.
Now, it just goes to show your fandom.
That's right. I don't hide the fact
Martavis
that I like
Bryant
a team.
Martavis Bryant is the second name.
What an outrage, Bucky.
What an outrage.
Know, hey, Nate, Bucky did his top – well, I did mine, too, and my list was right, the top 10 running backs of the Super Bowl era. Bucky broke.
This is great for the audience, by the way. Who has already heard about this top 10 list?
Listen, well, now Nate needs to find out about this. Here's how big a homer I am. Bucky Brooks had, as the eighth best running back of the Super Bowl era, Jerome Bettis.
Ninth.
I don't care. Either way, Jerome Bettis. He didn't put Earl Campbell on there. How say you?
Mm.
That's more ridiculous than anything I've just said.
Super Bowl era. I like Earl Campbell. I'm an Earl Campbell fan.
See, there you go.
It's opinionated based, though.
Well, you know what? But my gut tells me, it guides me. It's the North Star for all football opinions. Now, Nate, give me your opinion. Sammy Watkins, Calvin Benjamin. Did I say enough people?
You're talking about of the last 2 years, right?
Yes. Who's okay. Which guy or guys are going to the Hall of Fame?
Top three. Hall of Fame.
Holy smokes. That's I'm raising the standard. Man, if this is the all-time
jackets.
Well, somebody gave me the business. Somebody gave me the business.
I'm ready. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Somebody gave me the business on social media, and I said, well, the 2014 wide receiver class is the best of all time. They haven't done anything yet. And I said, well, I know. I'm speculating to some degree.
But now we're speculating about guys who haven't even played in the NFL.
So 2014 and 2015? Well.
That's right.
Okay, cool.
That's right. Go ahead.
I'm going with Odell Beckham Jr.
Number one.
Sammy Watkins, Amari Cooper.
Amari Cooper, three.
I'm going to give you one rookie. You said out of
the Okay, yeah, that's great.
I agree with Odell Beckham Jr. Okay. I agree with Amari Cooper. I think Amari Cooper is going to rip it up. Just watching what we've seen from him in Oakland, his route running has even improved from the time he left Alabama.
Right.
He is going to be a guy that right now comes in and plays. So those guys have success because they can run routes. The third guy, I'm going to say, guys, so
many, right? Tough.
Yeah, so
Mike Evans?
Yeah, Mike Evans, nah, Evan Benjamin.
Is it more, though?
I don't like those two guys.
Because
you want
more of a route runner.
It's hard for
you're
me
talking
to fall
Hall of
in
Fame.
Love. Yeah, it's hard for me to fall in love with a big body guy because you have to have more to sustain it over the long haul. Because guys that are Hall of Famers, they have the ability to affect the game when their physical skills have started to deteriorate. Mm. And so that becomes with solid skills. So I'm going to say Sammy Watkins goes into that class just because he has – some ability, his speed, I think he would develop enough to kind of find a way to make his way around the thing.
You know what? This leads me to another thing. But, Nate, you were around Randy Moss and Calvin Johnson. You got to see them up close and personal and obviously plenty of other talented guys too. For a year one breakout, isn't it more you want a physical freak like Randy Moss and you do a precise route runner? Or is Amari Cooper destined for a day one breakout in Oakland in that situation with a young QB?
He's destined for a day one breakout.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
If you're comparing, a big-time splash wide receiver that has – the height and the weight and the playmaking ability, you want that for sure. You want that Calvin Benjamin. You want a Mike Evans. But if you have a guy that can come in who's, 6'1", 6'2", decent weight, decent strength, but can run routes, I'm not saying he's Marvin Harrison, but mm-hmm. Marvin Harrison-esque, that's a guy that can go outside, inside, that's going to pick up the playbook fast. His amount of catches last year, 124, over 1,700 yards. Like, all that is going to translate to not – huge success. Maybe he's not, on the highlights every weekend, but solid production. That's 8 to 9 catches, getting close to 100 yards every game, mm-hmm. moving the chains. Like, you want a guy that's consistent. You want a guy that can help a young quarterback. And those are the guys that 10, 12 years from now, we're still watching.
They're still making plays. So what Nate is talking about is Amari Cooper was such an easy evaluation because when you turn on the tape, he played the game like a pro. Mm-hmm. I saw him in the slot. I saw him outside. I saw him run pro routes. I saw him run Dino routes. I saw him run stutter double comebacks. I saw him do things that in the league, when you're a number one receiver, that's what they draw up for you.
Right.
You're so special that, look, you're going to run the Dino this week. You're going to double move. You're going to do all these things. Amari Cooper already comes into the league with the toolbox full.
Oh.
So if I'm the offensive coordinator, I can throw it all at him the first year and say, young fella, let's go get it. And they're going to build it around him. So I would expect him to have 80-plus catches this year because he's the focal point in Oakland.
Yeah.
Like, most young guys don't get the opportunity to do that. And if they do get that, they don't have the skills. So he's a skilled player in an environment that will allow him to shine. I'm telling you, he's the best player they've drafted at wide receiver since Tim Brown. And he will have that kind of impact on what they do in Oakland.
And, Buck, that's a great point. See, let me get back to something you said about the toolbox being full. People don't understand how important that is from an offensive coordinator standpoint, even from a wide receiver coaching standpoint. That's time that you don't need to waste on. Now you can go in there and focus on the little details. Whoever we're playing that week, instead of you teaching him how to run the Dino, you saying, hey, we're going to focus the next 2 days on this particular quarterback. We're going to focus the next 2 days on Joe Hayden alone and trying to figure out ways to beat one of the elite cornerbacks. Instead of saying, hey, man, we got to spend Monday and Tuesday teaching you how to run this Dino route so we can hit you on the line when we're in the red zone. That's a big difference.
That's
when
a really interesting point. It's the difference between me being in pre-algebra when I was in 10th grade, I think, and my sister, who's a year younger than me, being in calculus in the grade below me. Some people
progress
at a different rate. Yep. It makes them better. All right. Hey, Nate, you got to run. Go do your total access.
Sure, man. Any more questions?
I have a lot of questions.
Got a story?
The one I want to do is, the thing I really want to hear from you, but let's not do this right now, but I have long contended that we have this pool of all-time wide receivers, Super Bowl era at least. Let's if we did Super Bowl era wide receivers, obviously Jerry Rice is number one. But what's remarkable is that it's really hard to figure out who 2, 3, 4, and 5. I mean, it is such a drop off the cliff once you get past and the names that would be in contention would be Steve Largent, Michael Irvin, Randy Moss, Calvin Johnson.
I think. Oh, don't throw T.O. out to build it.
Oh, and T.O., that's a fair one. But, I mean, it's a pretty big drop-off. You think, well, there's got to be an obvious answer. You know, if you start doing running backs, you go, well, is it Barry or is it Peyton or is it, you know. But it's kind of hard. You think, like, well, there's got to be more. And then you look and you're like, oh, there's just not anybody more. I mean, James Lofton, an all-time great, but he's not in that conversation. Yeah. And he's in the top 10, certainly.
That's a tough list. I couldn't even give you a
– all right, we'll talk about it. I don't want to put you on the spot today.
I do got a quick story, though.
All right.
Okay, so – training camp, my second year in Minnesota. This is when Brock Lesnar left WWE and then came out of retirement. And, you know, he's doing everything he needs to do to kind of fit in. And one day, all the vets were hazing all the young guys, right? So I thought I was a young vet. I didn't really get it. I thought, you know, once you finish your rookie year, you're a vet. But no, you got to be in 3-4 years established and mad respect from everybody. So they go attacking one of the rookie wide receivers. So I try to step up, like, all right, guys, that's enough. And he takes off running, the young wide receiver. Brock takes off after him, right? And I'm thinking, all right, let me step up in front of Brock, give him one of these hold-up bros. You know what I'm saying? He had enough. And I got in front of him, and he was like, hey, you either get out of the way or I'll put you out of the way. And at that point, and it wasn't like a joking way. He was like,
what's he doing?
I'm about to destroy you. That's how he looked into my soul. And I had to realize, is this a moment where keeping it real goes wrong, or do I just take this L? And I took that L and walked my butt in the locker room and was like, hey, Rook, you're on your own. So, yeah, funny, that was a funny story.
We were just talking about the importance of toughness coming into football. And
you got to display
the
it.
The teammates.
You got to know when to take them L's, though. You can
we
be
see
tough.
What Nate does. That's a business decision. That's what they call business.
Quick fun fact about Nate's second season. That was receiving-wise, stat-wise, his best season in the NFL. Over 1,000-plus receiving yards, 9 touchdowns. You balled out. Was it Brock Lesnar that, you know?
Nah, it wasn't Brock. You know who it was? It was Randy Moss. Randy Moss tore his hamstring. And he came to me, was like, we had a meeting, receiver meeting, and he kind of stuck around. And mind you, Randy was a man of very few words. He said, look, I'm going to be out 6 weeks. So you got 6 weeks to get everything you need to get, because when I come back, tearing up this league. And he was basically saying, you know, this is your time to shine. And what I did in that time, not only did I eat and kind of make a name for myself, I think that was the moment when I gained ultimate respect from Randy. And he realized, okay, this guy is legitimate. He's a football player. He loves the game, but he's worthy of being my number two, because that's a big deal. Like, I appreciate the fact that, yeah, I had a couple opportunities to be a number one in this league, but I relished in the spots where I was next to Calvin, next to Randy. And when he came back, he looked at me different than before he left. It was almost like, all right, you arrived, and you've proven that you can come out here and play opposite of me. And that meant more than anything. I didn't even realize that 1,000 yards would carry me through an 11-year career and get me paid a couple times, because everybody always referenced back to that, whether I was healthy or not. Like, he's capable of putting up 1,000 yards. So you can put up 1,000 yards in this league, you can get paid. You just got to stay healthy, shake the right hands, and never burn bridges.
Yeah, it's funny. So, like, I know Nate has to go, but so when Nate was coming out of Nevada, I was just scouting. I was just beginning, because you were in what draft class?
03.
So 03, that was like my second year in the league scouting. And his coach, DJ McCarthy, was a guy that was in the secondary coaching when I was in Oakland. But I remember watching him. And so what happens is, as we watch these young guys progress through, you see where they were as collegiate players. He played in Nevada, spread offense, was the man there, had a ton of catches, ton of receptions. And so in that scouting report, you talk about the production. He had a lot of production. He had a lot of exposure because he caught so many balls. He will be able to easily assimilate into the pro game because he's run routes. He's done things. He's been asked to do things that you ask pro receivers. But the respect that he talks about, that's something as a scout I can't put down, because I don't know how he's going to handle the lights when he's asked to be the guy in that room with Randy Moss. Can he earn his respect? Not because he came in as a second-round pick, but because when he's out and Randy's looking, can he deliver? that respect factor, when Nick talks about how important it is, we have this thing, players, game recognizes game.
Yeah.
Guys respect when a guy plays because they understand how difficult and how challenging it is. And when he delivers in that moment, when you walk back in the huddle, Randy will look at you and be like, okay, I can trust
one of the more interesting observations of me milling around here for the last handful of years around NFL media is exactly is that dynamic is, you know, I would think, well, you're in the you play pro football. You're the fraternity. You reach the highest level. But even within that, as you guys say, there's a hierarchy of, you know, the Hall of Famers. You know, they're that guy's not in the Hall of Fame. I mean, the Hall of Famer.
Well, but it's not all that though, because there's some Hall of Famers that we would say like, yeah.
No, I hear you, but I can watch. Yeah. It's like high school though, really. I mean, it is the cliques and stuff that people gravitate to certain levels, and certain guys don't sort of. You can feel there's a vibe. I'm not disrespectful to a guy who was in the league for a while, but there's a faction of guys that's like, hey, I mean, he wasn't. Come on, I mean, he played for a few years, but he's not on my level, and you can feel that in interactions with guys who come to visit, you know, our analysts. Not from either one of you, though. You're both delightful.
Oh, well, I appreciate it.
All right. Hit the bricks, Nate. You have to go. Oh, what a pleasure. Hey, so we got to do.
You're talking with Buck, man. That dude got a wealth of knowledge.
Oh, yeah. Wait a second. The Talent Turk is here. Marcus Smith, are you coming in here with Mike and Ike's? Mike and Ike sent us a bunch of boxes of Mike and Ike off of Ike Taylor and Mike Adams' memorable connection here. At NFL Media, there goes the great Nate Burleson. We have a lot of work to do.
I don't know if we can be able to do the coach thing because I got to go.
Let's do it quickly. I don't want. I've
got to go.
Where do you have to go?
Let's tease it.
I got to go pick up my little daughter. She's getting out of the dance.
She doesn't mind waiting. She knows you're. No,
I got to go.
We'll pick it up. We'll pick it up next episode.
All right.
She doesn't mind waiting. I got a picture of Bucky's daughter sitting
on a stoop.
Where's daddy?
She's on the stoop.
She has trust issues for the rest of her life.
You know what it's like being left of school.
Because Dave insisted on
Dave
doing
insisted
the coach's draft.
Dave insisted on doing some coach's draft.
Yeah.
Wait. We got the 27th pick here, Bucky.
All right, but wait. We haven't gotten to Martavis Bryant yet. Who's going to coach him to the Hall of Fame? No, all right. So
Martavis Bryant. I like that. But right. here's what I can respect about
it. It's not
about
ridiculous
it, though.
That I would bring up his name as one of the guys. I mean,
you're going to pick like a fourth-round dude. Over top of all the other guys that were picked ahead. I'm just saying.
I didn't pick him at all. Pick him. I listed him.
So we got Odell Beckham. And then, Martavis Bryant.
He's the next
name.
That's it. He's the next name out of everyone's mouth.
That's it.
What a bit of ridiculous.
Give me Chris Matthews with Seahawks over Martavis Bryant.
I'm just saying.
Black guy who doesn't know his name once the guy who was pulled off the scrappy, the CFL scrappy. Now, listen. All right, Bucky Brooks is going to go now. All right, someday we will do our coach draft here, but there goes Bucky Brooks to do his parental deed.
To be a father.
Yeah, apparently. All right, so I guess we'll wrap it up there, though. But we covered a lot of great stuff here.
Good stuff.
Nate was terrific, right?
Always fun having
Isn't
Nate
he here. Delightful?
He is delightful, yeah.
Bucky Brooks less so.
Whoa.
Well, listen.
You know what?
No, Nate's really
how can I be a homer when I'm the one telling him that Jerome Bettis doesn't belong ahead of Earl Campbell?
Dave,
how big a Steeler homer could I be?
In all seriousness, it's June the 30th today. I don't know if you know what that means, but it means I think we're like almost exactly to the day halfway through the year. All year long, you've been saying Bucky's, you know, in line for that Guest of the Year award that I won one time. But Nate suddenly seems to have caught your eye.
You know what? If we do, whether it's this week, you know, we should do that. That's a great idea, Handsome. To round out
the
half year before we go to a baseball game, maybe we should just sit down and we figure out the halfway point of 2015. How the Sheckies are looking, you know? Let's give everybody an update. Where are we on fruit?
I tell you what, if you want, on that front, go out and get yourself a white peach today because those right now are
It's the season for the white peach. It was dropped from the heavens into my refrigerator, and I pulled one out, and I ate it, and then I went straight up to cloud nine.
Right, and got 10 more.
That's right. I mean, just I hear what you're laying down there. You know what? Strawberries have been exceptional.
They've been good. I also discovered an entirely new fruit this week. They're calling it a cherry and a plum. go to a bar together.
Chum.
Plum. A cherry and a plum. Go to a bar together, a couple drinks probably. You know, everyone gets a little loose. Go home. The cherium is born. Half plum, half cherry. If you like, I'm serious about this. I've got them back downstairs. If you like cherries and you like plums and you like the idea of putting cherries and plums in your mouth at the same time.
Cherium, I see. Well, I said chum because.
Oh, a chum, I see.
Like a chum, which is nice because yeah. It's your pal. It's your fruity pal.
A plurry.
But if it were a chum already defines the fish you put on your hook to get bigger.
Yes.
And so that would be confusing.
That would be confusing. Anyway, try a cherium.
All right, I'll do that. How are we? What are our other categories? Egg preparations. I've been eating some delicious hard-boiled eggs of late that have been really very nice. All right, yeah. Well, let's not jump in.
Check in on it.
I don't like jumping in willy-nilly. So, all right. So, we'll do that.
Producer of the year for this show.
Tom Congratulations, Tommy Ty. You're looking good, fella.
Way out in the lead there. Can't be caught at this stage.
All right. So
all I'm going to say is I got Nate on the show today.
What do you mean? He just showed up and walked through the door.
No. That was a lot of hard work went into that.
What do you mean a lot of hard work?
A lot of walking upstairs and downstairs to make sure he gets in here.
Well, you know what? If that was your work, then let's do more of that because I love that. I want Michael Robinson just out of the blue. What? Michael Robinson all the way out in Virginia? Yep, now he's up on the flat screen behind us and we're kibitzing. The Czech Republic knows no borders, and the DDFP should follow that lead. We should just, you know, listen, we have conversations to have. Come on through the door. Come into 66 and join us. Handsome did it today. Thanks to Bucky Brooks for doing it. Nate Burleson, Black Tie for the work. Congratulations to Tommy Tie on his half-season victory. Congratulations to me on nailing the top 10 running backs of the Super Bowl era. Not like that, nail. All right, we'll be back with more Huey and Applesauce later on. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.